Hey there, friends, it's Nick, and this is episode 336 of the Story Hacker podcast. So if you listened to the last episode, you'll know that we're doing this short series at the moment on how to read. It's a three-part series. This is part two. In the last episode, part one, I talked a little bit about what to read, in the sense of what I read and how I'm sort of choosing which books to read all of, some which ones I discard, the place where I want to put my sort of focus and attention, and you know, some of those kind of issues. But today I want to pivot. I want to talk a bit about note taking and my process for note taking, because I'm one of these people that for most of my life has read with a pen in my hand. You know, whether it was fiction or non-fiction or whatever. You know, I've always loved that sort of tactile sense of interacting with a book, making a book my own, I think, with, you know, underlines and symbols and drawings. And I guess this gets us into the kind of digital versus paper divide. Now, I love digital books. It's one of the reasons that I could become a thriller author at all, using Kindle editions to sell my thrillers. And I certainly went through a stage where I thought, you know, I just don't have the space to keep all the books that I'm buying. What I really need to do is to buy digital versions, because actually the Kindle, particularly the apps on your tablets, on your iPad or whatever, they have become an awful lot better in allowing you to kind of interact with the text in terms of highlighting and copying and pasting, and that is certainly in some ways a more efficient process. I have to say that I still prefer printed versions of really good books. Now, as I said in the last episode, there are plenty of books where I feel like the kind of key idea is delivered in the first two or three chapters, and I'm more inclined to buy those on Kindle. If it looks like that kind of slightly padded out, good idea, but slightly padded out kind of book, I'm much more likely to buy it on Kindle. But if it turns out to be brilliant, I'll probably buy a paper copy so I can scribble in it, and also sometimes even an audio book. You know, I've got maybe 20, 25 books in my library where I've got all three formats, because all three formats work in different ways. But for me, the kind of canonical experience is still scribbling on books. And I've got a kind of a scheme. Of course, there's underlining bits that are important, but I've also got thought clouds. I've got little buttons that I draw that tell me to sort of follow that link to somewhere else. And I think this comes from, you know, this is a slight sidestep here, but when I was sailing, so we're talking back in 1991-92, I met a fantastic guy, Timothy de Bono, not the guy who writes about thinking, but an architect. Tim, if you're out there, I'd love to catch up again, mate. I spent some time with him on his yacht, and he was the first person really who helped me to think about reading as a kind of a discipline, I suppose. It's something not just for pleasure, although it is definitely that, but also to build up a body of knowledge and to understand things. And he used to talk about his library in a way that made me think, oh, I really want a library. And that's one of the things I've got now. Now, I don't have a massive amount of space, and I certainly buy more books than I can keep. But, you know, I've probably got, as I say, 25 or 30 real books that I really love, books that I get more out of every time I read them. And one of the reasons for that is the kind of the ability to take notes and to draw buttons. That's why I got into that story, wasn't it? Because one of the books that he talked about was the Fontana Dictionary of Modern Thought, which I bought when I got back from my trip. And the Fontana Dictionary of Modern Thought, friends, is like the internet before the internet existed. It's this big book full of these little two or three paragraph ideas, things that were important. And in each of those paragraphs, you'd find words that were italicized, which meant that they also existed as concepts or entries in the book, and you could follow around. And I used to spend quite a lot of time scribbling in my copy of the Dictionary of thought, and bouncing around these kind of little trees of understanding. And it really affected me and affected how I thought about reading. One of the things I didn't mention yesterday in the podcast about what to read is that there's a real advantage actually to reading two or three books at once, at least for me, and cross disciplines, because that's one of the ways in which you can kind of organically see, how does this thing in economics affect this thing in creativity? You know, what's the interrelationship? Is there an interrelationship of those two things? Do they play off each other? Are they opposites? You know, can you use them to make a simple machine? You know, that kind of idea. And of course, the internet can be fantastic for that, but it can also be the place where we end up going down a rabbit hole because we're sort of stuck in a kind of echo chamber of things that, you know, with people that believe what we believe and know what we know and think what we think. And, you know, that can obviously be a problem as well. Anyway, sidetracked. Sorry, sidetracked. Because what happens, what happens after you've got all these notes? So what I would try and do, don't always do it, but what I will try and do at the end of if I've read a book and really liked a book, is to pull out the things I think are most important and make my own kind of contents list at the front of the book. You know, so I can jump immediately to places where I thought, ah, this is really good, this is really relevant to me, this is really useful for my life. And that's one stage. And then the second stage is this commonplace book idea. Now, commonplace books have probably been popularised most recently by Ryan Holiday, who wrote the books about Stoicism, which I've recommended before. And he learned his method of commonplace bookery from Robert Greene, who I've mentioned before as well, who wrote 48 Laws of Power and all those kind of books. And Greene effectively taught Ryan his method, which was to make notes in the books and then bring things out and put them onto cards and put them into, you know, effectively shoeboxes full of kind of index cards. Now, I don't do that, but the kind of the concept behind this, which, you know, which is really called a commonplace book. In other words, it's a book about the world and about stuff that you have created for yourself under your own sort of schema, if you like, that only you have access to, I suppose. And in that sense, I guess it's really a kind of a posh name for a fairly obvious idea. In the same way that, you know, we can say that I scribble in the side of books, or we can say, you know, I do marginalia, darling. I do marginalia, which is the posh word for scribbling in the you know, the borders of your book. But I think the real magic, of course, of the commonplace book is you end up with a kind of an index that is yours, a kind of an understanding of the world that is yours. And Charlie Munger, as I've mentioned before, talks about our need, if we want to understand the world, to have a kind of a lattice work of models in our heads. And, you know, a commonplace book is certainly one of those things where we can start to try and integrate this kind of knowledge into our lives. Now, I'm going to talk more about integration in the next episode, because I think it's something that really needs its own, you know, few minutes, really. But I think the thing about the commonplace book is that you can take index cards like Robert Greene and Ryan Holiday. You can make an Evernote file. You can do it in Apple Notes. You can use an outliner. You can scribble in a notebook. You know, there's an awful lot of talk and chatter online about the process, about the right way to do this. And as so often, when we get into that kind of situation, it covers up the real fact, which is that you need to just start. You need to just start, whether you're making a commonplace book or considering doing a podcast or what have you. What you need to do is start. And yes, your process may evolve. It probably should evolve. But we can easily spend all of our time, you know, creating the, the revision timetable, and then we never get to do any revision. Yeah, is that familiar to anyone? So that's what I think we should do, you know, with the note taking, with the marginalia, with the commonplace book, is that we should get started. And, you know, if you're reading, if you are actually reading, then you need a way to access what you've read. And again, we'll talk about that more in the next episode. But I do think that unless you've got a brain that's like a steel trap, the start of that is reading with a pen, making notes, interacting with the book, making it yours, and then pulling those notes out, the ones that are really important, not all of them. You know, I maybe highlight, unless it's by Seth Godin, I probably highlight, I don't know, 25% of a book, but less than 5% of it comes out into my index or my kind of commonplace book. But that is the start of something. If we want to integrate it into our lives and actually use it, we need to pull these things out so we can start looking at them along with the stuff that comes from another book that we've read. Maybe it's in the same discipline, maybe it's in a different discipline, but these things, you know, we want to kind of create something that is unique to us and unique to the way that our brain works. Anyway, I look forward to carrying on in episode 3 or part 3 of How to Read. And thanks for listening. And remember, your story means business.